saving money on everything you need at Menards. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements, and it enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 26 colors of Owens Corning Duration shingles and transform your home today. Shop our selection of roofing products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Oh, good morning. Are you all right? Hope you are. I'm all right. Yeah. Had a good weekend. Cheers. It's Monday. Monday. Another week. Another chance to set right what once went wrong. It's just tick past 8 in the a.m. On Monday the 20th of April in the year of our Lord, 2026, you are the glorious band, the chosen few. I don't need to tell you who you are. You know who you are. You're the very best among us. My band of brothers and sisters, thank you for joining me. Without you, it's not a thing. As always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning. Yeah, I'm all good.
Great. All right. Shall we get into it? Shall we stop faffing about and just get straight into it? What's that cabal of Fleet Street, evil Fleet Street editors banging on about this morning? Want to try and tell you is or isn't important? Are they lying to you about by omission this morning? Yeah, don't mention Ireland again, still, again, this like every day. Don't mention Ireland. Yeah, don't mention Epsom. Yeah, don't mention Ehud Barak. Got it. Commons showdown and Starmer fights for future. It's a wall-to-wall Mandy day, basically, more or less, on the papers, anyway. Starmer and Mandy. The greatest double act since Morecambe and Wise. Since Little and Large. Since Cannon and Ball. You've got to be old to get those references. You've got to be in your 40s at least to get those references. Harry, you won't know. You don't know Cannon and Ball, do you?
No.
Okay, I'll move on. Common showdown for Starmer over Mandelson vetting scandal. And there's a queer Stalin in a nuclear submarine. One of the Vanguard class nuclear submarines. PM faces high stakes statement to PMs after Guardian revelations. Wasn't just the Guardian, but yeah, the Guardian. Yeah, fair enough. They did do it. Independent being good on it as well. But they've all been chasing it, haven't they? They've all been chasing it. But yeah, so today on Monday, later today on Monday, Starmer's going to go before the House, the actual House of Commons, and give us some sort of statement and answer some questions all about what he knew and when. What the Prime Minister knew and when. Whether he'll double down on his lies or whether he'll be able to show somehow that he wasn't lying. We'll see. Let's get to the iPad because that's got the best blurb. It's such wall-to-wall Mandy today that we'll do the blurb and we'll talk a fair bit about it. Quickly say, Vance sent to Iran talks with reasonable deal and dire warning. Trump wants to have more talks with the Iranians in Islamabad. They're not even sending a delegation. Talk a bit about that later as well after we get through the Mandy stuff. Mandelson had top-level security clearance. That's not his vetting. That was the sensitive things he was allowed to see, despite not having vetting. It was the highest level of clearance. All the secrets, more or less. Telegraph. Starmer knew about Mandelson red flags. Prime Minister will give his explanation to MPs today in critical Commons session. All right. Okay, here's the iPaper. Starmer faces showdown in Commons and fights for his future. PM will set out his version of events surrounding the Peter Mandelson security vetting fiasco and his decision to sack the head of the Foreign Office, Sir Ollie Robbins. Because remember, Starmer says he didn't find out that Mandelson had failed the vetting until last week at some point. But as the Guardian, and I think the Independent as well, certainly the Guardian at least, they've got receipts showing that Number 10 did know, must have known, almost certainly must have known long before that. So that's a lie. That's just the last lie among like a string of them, isn't it? And Ollie Robbins, that Foreign Office very, very senior secretary, civil servant, apparently now he's taking legal advice because he thinks he was unfairly, completely sort of unfairly dismissed. Sort of, you know, it was illegal, essentially, to fire him. He didn't do anything wrong. Ministers insist Starmer was kept in the dark and did not mislead Parliament, saying he would have blocked the appointment if he knew of vetting failure. Because if you remember as well, Starmer said a number of times, I think at least three times in Parliament and many, many, many more times on top of that, all the due process was done correctly to vet Mandy. And everything, all the T's were crossed and all the I's were dotted. Nothing to see here. It's just a case now, isn't it, of whether he said that in good faith or not. MPs set to grill PM and question his judgment. Sacked Foreign Office boss Sir Ollie Robbins prepares for high-stakes Commons appearance tomorrow. Yeah, so he's going to, Ollie Robbins himself is going to go before a select committee. Not, he's not an MP, so he won't go in the actual, the Commons, but in another room inside the Palace of Westminster, he'll be grilled by people. I wonder what he will say. That will be, I suspect that will be much more interesting than what Starmer says. Because Starmer, you can expect, will just squirm and prevaricate and whatever. But what Ollie Robbins will probably have more juicy information, I would have thought. Might tell us things we didn't know, really. Okay, a minister tells the iPaper that while disquiet remains over PM's leadership, it has not intensified. I.e. whether various people, Angela the Fridge Rayner, maybe in conjunction with Andy Burnham. Does Andy Burnham wear eyeliner? Anyway, whether there'll be a leadership challenge for him before May, even. Day Starmer has to stand up and take the blame. As PM faces moment of reckoning on Mandelson scandal, he's told to stop hiding behind officials and finally accept culpability. There's a picture of Amanda Knox. Harry, do you even... How old were you in 2010? You were still a small child, right, in 2010?
Yeah, I would have been 5.
Oh, okay, so you don't remember... Yeah, okay. Everyone else, remember Amanda Knox, that American woman who was accused of killing some other young lady in Italy and was found guilty of it, but in the end was completely exonerated because it was obviously some black dude. Obviously some black dude called Rudy something or other. But for a while, she was like the darling of the papers. Foxy Noxy. Oh, why did they do that? Foxy Noxy. Like when they always used to call Michael Jackson Wacko Jacko. Anyway. Oh, Arsenal played Man City. And it was a six-pointer, kind of. You know, like whoever won that game's probably going to go on and win the Premiership. City won. All right. Judgment Day. It's Judgment Day. It's not really, is it? He'll probably get a grilling. Probably not going to be a pleasant day for him, but it's not like... It's not like his career is going to be over today. All right. Oh, there's something where he kissed Arlene, went on a nuclear submarine, and it's talking about heroes of the deep. To be honest, to be a submariner, I wouldn't fancy it. It's pretty badass, right, I think. Sometimes you're underwater for hundreds of days at a time. Let's not have claustrophobia. Yeah, pretty badass. I wouldn't fancy being a submariner, to be perfectly honest. But it's good people do. Amazing. Amazing stuff they do. The Financial Times. Oh, look, in China, a robot ran a marathon or ran some sort of race faster than the humans. Yeah. Because it doesn't run out of energy. As long as there's a battery in it, it won't ever stop. It's Terminator reference day for me. It doesn't get tired. It doesn't need a drink of water. And it will never, ever stop. While the battery lasts. Okay. Again, Man City. Haaland there scored the winner. One of the best players in the world there. All right. Something ridiculous from the Star about you go punting down the cam at Cambridge. Ridiculous. All right. People steal loads of petrol at the petrol pump. You go to a petrol station, fill up your car, and then just drive away. Oh, the biggest story here, sorry. That is a story all in the news today, but the biggest story here is just crime in general. Crime in general costs the UK taxpayers £90 million a day. Yeah, because we've had a giant crime explosion over the last couple of decades. What changed? What changed from about 1997 onwards to mean that we've just got far more crime in this country than we used to have? Particularly violent robberies. And the bill to the state for prosecutions, the police, and the NHS, where people get hurt all the time. It's just skyrocketed, gone through the roof. What changed? What happened? Is that we got flooded with foreign fifth columnists. Millions of them. And per capita, their crime rate is gigantically higher than natives. Is that the reason? It is, isn't it? The Sun. Oh, look, there you go. Tank robbers. £100 million, fill up and flee. Thefts soar in fuel crisis. I don't know how you can get away with that exactly eventually, because, of course, there'll be CCTV cameras, and they'll see your number plate. Won't the authorities eventually catch up with you and say, look, we've got the receipt, we've got the footage of you filling up your petrol tank and just driving away? Seems like loads of, well, £100 million, what is that, a week or something? People, so many people in this country think the law just simply doesn't apply to them, don't they? And in many cases, it doesn't. Do a burglary in vast swathes of this country, you'll almost certainly completely get away with it. Steal a mobile phone, statistically, you will get away with it. Steal a car, quite likely to just get away with it. Police not really investigate it at all, or at all. All right. Let's talk about Starmer for a minute. Let's talk about Sir Keir for a moment. I said on the main podcast of the Low Seats channel last week, and I said it also on my own channel I do with Nate, Mr. H Reviews. That channel is called The State of Politics. State of Politics. I said on those two things, I say it again here. I think there are interesting parallels between what Keir Starmer's going through, quite possibly the death throes of his leadership, and what Richard Nixon went through, President Richard Nixon, with the Watergate scandal. I want to talk about that a little bit. Now, first of all, can you go to the Stain Cam for a moment? Just a quick moment, please, Harry. State of Politics. State of Politics. Check it out. So the Watergate scandal, what happened there, for anyone who doesn't know? On my other channel, my main channel, my first channel, History Bro, nothing behind a paywall there, it's all completely free there. Really early on, so like 6-7 years ago, long before Loadseaters existed, I did a series all about Nixon and the Watergate scandal. So I think it's fascinating. For some reason, it's one of those things in history I found fascinating for years and years and years. Read a few books about it. John Dean's book is very, very interesting. Anyway. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to throw shade on Nixon for the sake of it. I think his Vietnam policy was a bit crazy. But other than that, he did loads of good things for America. Loads of good things. His foreign policy with the Russians and the Chinese was pretty much on point. The SALT talks. Nixon did quite a few good things. I'm not a Nixon hater in and of itself. He might have lost, he narrowly lost to John Kennedy in 1960. In 1968, he won. And in 1972, his re-election was a landslide. It was like top two or three landslides of all time. Nixon's re-election in 1972. He was very, very popular among normal Americans. It was sort of the leftist media that like hated his guts, Tricky Dick hated his guts. They would try and find anything to destroy him. Okay. But when it came to the Watergate scandal, he did lie loads and was caught in those lies. And it's such a fall from grace. And the way it was shown in the end, the receipts, it was just completely and utterly undeniable. And so he was just about to get impeached and then probably prosecuted. And he just resigned. And Gerald Ford pardoned him immediately. Basically. So he avoided going to jail very narrowly. The only president only ever to have to resign. Okay. So what that was, is the original thing that happened wasn't Nixon's fault. A bit like this, right? It wasn't like Keir Starmer failed to do the security checks, was it? It wasn't like it was Keir Starmer's responsibility to vet Mandy and just didn't. It was someone else's job, and if we believe his story anyway, let's believe his story for a moment, or at least an element of it, that he didn't know. He wasn't even told that Mandy had failed the vetting. Again, it's not that's not his fault, is it? You can't blame him for that. But then it's how you deal with it after that, right? If you start lying and telling half-truths and spinning things after the fact, the cover-up. So what happened with Nixon was that somehow people under him, some crazy rogue people under Nixon, people like what Howard Hunt and Gordon Liddy, Frank Sturges, James McCord, right? A bunch of people way, way, way under Nixon. They worked at the White House and were sort of on the White House books. But Nixon never ordered them to do anything like this. They broke into the Democrat, Nixon's a Republican, they broke into the Democrat headquarters in the Watergate Hotel. Well, it was a Watergate office building complex. It's not just a hotel. It's also this whole complex of buildings. The Democrats had one of their headquarters there. These crazy dudes like Gordon Liddy, Frank Sturges, they broke in there and tried to bug it, or did bug it, to just try and get dirt on the other side, on the enemy. Right? Dirty tricks, really bad dirty tricks, illegal stuff. Anyway, the bugs weren't placed just right, so they went back another time and broke in again. And at that time, just the normal police, the normal DC police, sort of got a call saying, there's people breaking into that building. The normal police turn up, arrest them. They didn't have guns or anything. They had loads of espionage gear, loads of cameras and telephone bugs and stuff. They didn't have guns, so they were just arrested. Okay, so that happens. When Nixon finds out about that, he's like really angry. He's like, what the hell? What? I think he called it like, goddamn dumbest thing I ever heard. So like Starmer and this. Nixon didn't, he's not responsible for that. Now what he should have done at that point, Nixon, is just say, look, something crazy's gone on. Something weird and bad and illegal has happened. I'm just going to completely come clean, say sorry. I'm not responsible for it, but it did happen on my watch. The buck does stop with me. Right? Let's do a full hangout. For 100% truth, what happened here? He didn't do that. He realised that some of the people like James McCord worked for the committee to re-elect the president, and he worked for, almost certainly was ordered by a guy called John Mitchell, who's Nixon's very good friend and attorney general. And anyway, it would, even though Nixon himself wasn't responsible, the fallout, the political sort of scandal of it would affect the White House. And there's other things, like Howard Hunt was on the White House payroll. Gordon Liddy was. So Nixon should have just come clean at that point. It would have been so much better and easier, and probably wouldn't have led to the end of his presidency if he just ripped the band-aid off at that moment. He didn't. Instead, he tried to cover it up, tried to lie about it and cover it up sort of endlessly. Pretend there's an investigation going on, pretend he's doing a band-aid ripping off full hangout exercise, but he never was. And then the scandal just got worse and worse and worse until that John Mitchell had to be fired anyway, until his closest right-hand men, Ehrlichman and Haldeman, had to be fired anyway. He's the counsel to the White House, John Dean. In the end, he got to the president himself, and he was going to be impeached and prosecuted and resigned. John Dean, in the Oliver Stone movie, is played by Niles Crane. Remember Fraser Crane, his little brother, Niles Crane? And the smoking gun, really, or one of the smoking guns for Nixon, because it was all recorded in the White House. He had a recording button under his desk, and he could record everything that was going on. He recorded himself saying dodgy things. And eventually they got out. To this day, you can just go on YouTube and listen to some of it. It got out. One point, John Dean says to Nixon, this is far deep into the scandal. The scandal lasted for like months and months and months, 18 months or more. It trickled on and on and on. John Dean says, look, at this point, if you want people like Howard Hunt and Frank Sturges to be quiet, to just take their criminal convictions and go to prison for 5 years, 10 years, and just refuse to mention you and the White House and John Mitchell and Ehrlichman and Haldeman, they're going to want loads of money. Like, silently, you need to silently have to pay them because they've got families and stuff. You're going to have to pay them loads of money to keep quiet. Right, that's absolute criminal stuff at that point, right? Truly, truly criminal stuff. And the correct thing to do at that point for Nixon would have been said, what are you talking about? That's crazy. You're talking crazy stuff. Like, I'm not a gangster. I don't pay people to be quiet. I'm the president of the United States. But Nixon goes, how much? And John Dee says, about maybe $1 million. Nixon goes, I can get that. Don't ask me how, but there's ways you can get that. I can get that for you. Million dollar hush money. Yep. Go do it. So, once again, with all that said, I'll stop banging on about Nixon now. But the point is, the original thing, Nixon didn't do anything wrong, but he lied about it afterwards. He tried to cover it up and lie about it afterwards endlessly and kept doubling down and doubling down and doubling down. Even years later, after all the receipts are in and everyone knew exactly what the president knew and when, he'd still go on Frost and try and lie about it. It's like, oh, dude. So, back to Keir Starmer. It's not his fault, is it? I don't think that Mandy didn't have the vetting and was given the job anyway. Someone was probably told by someone way above his pay grade to give Mandy that job. But with all the fallout of it, the idea that he didn't know until last week, that seems like a lie. It seems like he's caught in a lie there. Because The Guardian and The Independent have got the receipts. They're talking, like people at The Guardian and The Independent, talking to Tim the Toolman Taylor, Tim Allen, at the Foreign Office, saying, but we know, we've got sources that Mandy didn't pass the vetting, and surely Number 10 would have known. Still, Starmer, he might even go before Parliament today and keep doubling down, going, no, no, we done nothing wrong. I and Number 10 have done nothing wrong. We definitely didn't lie to you about it a bunch of times, going back for months now. And it's like, it's starting to get embarrassing. Really badly embarrassing. All right. Well, there you go. We shall see what he says. Whether he might try and do the thing at this point of saying, try and fall on people's good nature. Just say, I'm really sorry. We did bugger up. Still insist I didn't know until last week. But I'm really, really sorry. The responsibility does stop with me. I take full responsibility. It's not really good enough, though, just to say that, is it? Did you lie months ago or not? Yes or no? About something reasonably important. Well, very important, really. Whether Mandy was... Because Mandelson was sort of acting as something like a spy, wasn't he? It seems like Mandy's first allegiance was to Jeffrey Epstein and the cabal that ran Jeffrey Epstein. Isn't it? He would pass Jeffrey Epstein very, very sensitive information right away. You could characterise that as espionage. Jeffrey Epstein and the cabal that ran him are sort of a foreign entity. And they're sort of a foreign body. They absolutely should not have had sensitive, if not market-sensitive, information coming from the heart of the British government. But that's exactly what Mandy did. How he's not actually on remand right now, Mandy, I mean, how he's not in a cell right now for this stuff is mind-blowing to me. That's not to mention the China connection. Some reports over the weekend that Mandy's old advisory lobbying business that he sold his shares in just before it collapsed and made loads of money, but all the other partners didn't, that their biggest client was a company that worked very, very, very closely with the Chinese military, basically the Chinese military. Do we know if he passed them any secrets? Don't know. That company's all their servers and all their emails over 10 years mysteriously disappeared. And it's gone. So Mandy is dodgy as hell, about as dodgy as it could be, really. Super, super, super dodgy. So it really matters if what Starmer knew and when, and whether he lied about it. It's not just some little peripheral thing. It could be that Andy put a traitor right at the heart of government. Keir Starmer put a traitor right at the heart of government. It could well be that. Against the vetting of MI6. We'll see what he says today, and we'll see what Sir Ollie Robbins says tomorrow, shan't we? Right, I'll move to my backup water here. It's not a second cup of tea. It's just water in this one. All right. All right. Should we have a look at our poll? What our poll says today before we move on to the websites. In our poll, we just asked you guys to show 1,000 votes. Will Keir Starmer survive until the general election? Okay. I thought the poll was going to be, would he survive until the local election? But okay, will he survive until the general election? Yes, 27% say yes. No's have it at 57%. And maybe is at 16. So it's a complete win for the no vote. But not as overwhelming a win as I might have thought. I mean, I would click no if I was taking that poll, so we're largely on the same page. But a significant 27% say yes. That's interesting. That's interesting. I would have thought it'd be... I thought it would have been up in the 80s and 90s of you would vote no for that. Not merely 57. But okay. Still a win. Still a significant win. All right, that's the poll. Let's have a look at the website, shall we? Well, let's check in with the price of oil first, real quick. Price of oil, West Texas, $93, Brent, $98. When I looked earlier this morning, about an hour and a half ago, maybe as much as 2 hours ago, West Texas was like at $89 a barrel. Got up a little bit there. But yeah, so still under $100, well, this morning, as of this moment, it's still, of course, very volatile. That is the main thing that it is, volatile. But not astronomically expensive. Despite everything that's going on in the Straits of Hormuz, which is a fair amount. Let's have a look at that. Right. US Navy attacks and seizes Iranian cargo ship with peace talks due to take place in Pakistan, even though there's no Iranian delegation. There's no peace talks. There won't be peace talks. I highly doubt they'll come to any sort of agreement, even though Trump and various voices out of the White House and the State Department are saying it's going well, there's going to be, it might well happen, we might get a last minute deal. But look, right there, Tehran will never cede control of Straits of Hormuz, senior Iranian politician tells the BBC. And, as I say, these peace talks in Pakistan, they're not even sending a delegation, the Iranians. No, it's no peace talks. The cognitive dissonance a little bit between some of the headlines and like the reality. The headline, and then even the reporting just below that headline. It's like, why'd you go with that headline? Because that's not an accurate description of reality at this point. With peace talks due to take place. Are they? No, they're not. What peace talks? Or that there's like a 10-day ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon. No, Israel's just kept bombing the whole time. And Hezbollah's saying, we won't accept that, we'll never back down. But yet you'll get headlines saying, there's a 10-day ceasefire. Well, there just isn't, though. All right. Yeah, the Americans, they've got their blockade, haven't they? Just outside the Straits of Hormuz. And they did actually board an Iranian tanker, cargo ship. In fact, do we even have a little bit of footage of it? I think there was. Wasn't there? Yeah. Let's play this. I'll turn the sound off because you don't. It's just the sound of helicopters. And if anyone is only listening to the Beau Show this morning, I don't want to just bombard your ears with helicopter sound. But if you're watching, look, there's just a bit of footage. Only about 30 seconds there, but actual footage of the US Marines, the Marine Corps, boarding this Iranian tanker in the Straits of Hormuz, seizing it. Apparently they blew a big hole in the side of it somewhere, in like the engine room or something, and then There you go. Marines abseiling down onto it. There you go. Some would say that's brilliant, that's great, that's sticking it to the Iranian, the evil theocratic Iranian regime. Some say that's just piracy, that's just illegal and tantamount to piracy. I mean, you know me, you guys know me by this point, right? I'm an Anglo-American, broadly speaking, on board with the Americans. Not a fan of Islamic theocracies. So, don't want to be accused of TDS, but it's a little bit like piracy, though, isn't it, as well? But there you go. There you go. I suspect whether this thing will escalate, keep escalating now, because Donald Trump said he gave, they've got a ceasefire, haven't they? The Iranians and the Americans have got a ceasefire. That runs out in less than 72 hours. Is it like a bit over 48 hours or something like that now? Something in that ballpark before that runs out. And Trump has said again, he said the thing that unless Iran make a deal with him, he's going to blow up all their power stations and bridges. That's what he's saying again. No more Mr. Nice Guy. That's literally what he said in the Truth Social post. Because over the weekend, the Iranians also fired, or in the Straits of Hormuz, also fired on some shipping. I think there was one French ship, or there was one UK flagged ship. And the Iranians fired at it, but only with sort of small arms fire. They didn't, like, blow it up with missiles and drones. They just fired at it with, I don't know exactly, but small arms fire. Trump said, that wasn't very nice, was it? Again, literally a quote. That wasn't very nice, was it? No more Mr. Nice Guy. If you guys don't come to a deal in the next, like, 2 days or so, we're going to send you back to the Stone Age for real. All your bridges and power plants. All that stuff. I mean, who knows? There's that cliche, isn't it? Is it a cliche? There's a meme, that taco meme that Trump always chickens out. He doesn't, though, does he? He has actually pulled the trigger on a whole number of things. But at this point, for me, there is, I really don't want to be accused of TDS. But at this point, if he keeps, I would say after this ceasefire deadline runs out, if he doesn't do anything at that point, it starts to look a little bit like taco, doesn't it? Like you've threatened, what, 3 or 4 times now? Not that I want all the power stations and bridges in Iran to be blown up. I don't. I don't want the normal innocent people of Iran to suffer. So let's get that clear. But what I'm saying is, politically, for Trump, from Trump's point of view, if this thing runs out and he's threatened again to blow up the bridges and power plants, and Iran just stands there irresolute and doesn't blink, and Trump again goes, okay, I'll give you another 10 days or something, it's starting to look like Trump chickening out at that point. For me. You can't keep threatening. How many times can you threaten people and then they don't blink, they don't move a muscle, and you don't do the thing you just threatened? How many times can you do that before you're not believed anymore? I think, to me, it looks like, this is just my analysis, it looks like Iran has got no intention of coming to the peace talk tables again. As I say, they haven't even sent a delegation to Islamabad. So the idea that the Americans and the Iranians will reach a deal, I don't see that happening in the next 2 days at all. So then the ball is in Mr. Trump's court, isn't it, at that point? Are you going to blow up? Is it going to be bridge and power plant day or not? Again, for the record, to make it perfectly clear, I'd rather he didn't do that, causing much, much more misery to the average person of Iran. However, he's threatened to do that a bunch of times now. And Iran just simply haven't blinked. So the ball's in his court. Are you going to do it or not? And as I say, I don't think they are going to come to the table and make a deal. So in like 2 days or so, 2.5 days, whatever it is, his hand is going to be forced. If he backs down again and just says, well, we've already done regime change anyway, and we don't really need to do that, so we're not going to do it now. Or I'll give you guys another 10 days or something. the creators of that taco meme vindicated. All right. Let's have a look at some other stories, perhaps, shall we? Oh, yes. I think in Louisiana, some dude went into a place and shot a load of children, 7 or 8 children, most of them his own children. Insider trading suspicions looming over Trump's presidency. Yeah, I find that quite interesting. We've covered it a few times, haven't we, on Breakfast with Bo, the Bo Show. Bo's Breakfast Club, hashtag the real BBC. We covered it a number of times, haven't we, where it looks like, or it just is the case, that some people on the inside of the Trump administration, whether it's the White House itself or perhaps the State Department, perhaps the Pentagon, perhaps people in Israel who have got like the inside story on what Trump's about to do, just start placing bets one way or another, whether it's short or not, about what's just about to happen, and making loads of money off of it, betting on the movement of markets and stuff. You know Trump's about to do something, and that's gonna, or say something even, that will move markets, equities markets, or sort of commodities markets, even currency markets, perhaps. You know that it's going to send the price up or down one way or another. It's good news or bad news as far as the markets are concerned. You start making trades off the back of that. Make a bit of money. It's sort of undeniable that something like that's going on. Look, trading spikes. Just before like an interview or whatever. Or just before a big Truth Social post. Or just before the Pentagon make a statement about something, that they've just done something. Markets, boop, onto the back of that information, markets start going crazy. But you're already in. You've already placed your bet. And surprise, surprise, it was the right bet. Number of times this seems to have happened. Look, most people in the world don't know what's just about to happen. Something happens, boom, the markets go down, whatever it is. Well, in Brent crude in this case. Dodgy as hell, isn't it? Dodgy as hell. More trading spikes. All right, you get it. What else have we got? Let's have a look. There was something in Sky News this morning I thought was interesting, was it? The Mail Online. The Mail. What was it? Oh, yeah, this. The quiet Welsh town filled with Turkish barbershops. Turkish. A number of people come from places like Iraq and Syria, and they just say they're Turkish because it just sounds better to the British ear. Oh, you're from Turkey, are you? Oh, that's fine. Turkey's all right, isn't it? Syria sounds a bit scary. Iraqi sounds a bit scary. So they just say they're Turkish. It's a Turkish barbershop. They're not Iraqi Kurds that are militant. No, they're Turks. They're just Turkish. You've been on holiday to Turkey before, haven't you? They were all right, weren't they? Yeah. The quiet Welsh town. You mean every town. I don't know why you've singled out one little Welsh town. Every town, nearly, in Britain, is filled with Turkish barbershops. Where residents joke, it's not a funny joke, that you never have to queue for a haircut because there are no customers. Yeah, no customers. Very rarely customers. Little blurb here says, it comes at a time of mounting scepticism. Mounting scepticism. Everyone that's not a traitor or a complete moron is not sceptical about it. They know exactly what it is. At a time of mounting scepticism about the booming, quote, Turkish-style, quote, barbers, with police believing a minority of them are being used as fronts for criminal gangs. Now, most of them, I would have thought. Got no special information, but the vast majority of them, you would have thought. Any business that has no real customers, hardly any customers, it won't be a business for very long. Yet there they are. More and more and more of them crop up, if anything. Or the barbershop which no one's ever in, after about a year, suddenly it's a vape shop that no one's ever in. Okay, that a minority are used as fronts for criminal gangs. Last year, hundreds of barbers were raided in an operation led by the National Crime Agency, leading to dozens of arrests for crimes ranging from money laundering and drug dealing to modern slavery. It's a disgusting blight on our country, and in Bowes, Britain, it would be one of the things I would go to war with them. I would spend large amounts of resources, time and energy and political capital on ridding our country of all of this, the actual physical things and the people behind it. Go to war with them. They're nearly all gangsters and criminals. And they're nearly all fronts for money laundering, drug dealing and modern slavery, or people trafficking. A terrible, 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 disgusting blight on our nation. Sickening. You're expected to walk past, like a high street like that, you might have one after another after another. You have a barber shop, some crappy chicken shop, a vape shop, a sweep shop, another vape shop, another Turkish barbers. The high street's just that. And we're supposed to believe that it's real. We're supposed to just get over it, just walk past it, ignore it. Don't worry about it. The amount of organised crime in this country is staggering. These fake shops. It's honestly, it's heartbreaking. It really is. Meanwhile, normal people trying to start a business from scratch can barely even dream of starting it because the red tape and the taxes are too much. It's too much. You'd need a fair amount of money just to start a business. You wanted to start a shop, a little shop of whatever it is. You need quite a lot of money to just get it off the ground. Of course, these people, how can they afford that? How can these people that are straight over from Turkey or wherever, Syria, Iraq, how can they afford to do all that and keep it going even though no one ever goes in there and have a tricked out BMW or Mercedes with tinted out windows sitting out front? How can they afford that? Because it's a front for organised crime and they're making loads of money out of money laundering or drug dealing or people smuggling. People trafficking, modern slavery. And the police will very occasionally do a half-assed, weak-wristed effort, token effort to crack down on a few of them here or there. Not acceptable, not acceptable. In Bowes, Britain, that would be right near the top of the agenda. Stamp all of that out. Get rid of them. Clear them out. Get every last one of them. Deport them. Get them out of these islands. A cancer. It's a cancer. Britain's got cancer. And it's these fake fronts that are to do with crime. Ugh. Revolting. Okay. Let's have a look. There was a story in The Sun I thought was interesting. Okay, well, this is what I was talking about. Back to the Iran thing for a moment. You know, if Iran won't make a deal with the Donald, then the ball is back in his court, as I said. So what? So what's he going to do? Will blowing up a bunch of power stations and bridges, will that get the regime changed? I would suspect not. It's extremely resilient, isn't it? That regime. Extremely. So this story in The Sun says, more shock, more awe. That's a reference to the 2003 Iraq invasion, where Donald Rumsfeld, Rummy, over at the Pentagon, said their attack on Iraq will be shock and awe. So, there you go. More shock and more awe. Trump, quote, needs Iraq-style mass invasion plan to topple Iran's regime, end quote. Well, it looks like it, doesn't it? Anything short of, you know, massed infantry or cavalry, armoured cavalry divisions sweeping across the plains of Persia, rooting out all the last sort of strongholds in the mountains, in the Zagros Mountains or whatever. Anything short of that, I feel like, maybe, probably, won't be enough. I mean, could be proved wrong. I've said this a number of times. We could wake up any given morning or any given afternoon, you suddenly get word coming through the wire on Twitter or whatever that the regime is collapsing or has collapsed. That could happen at any moment, couldn't it? Looking less and less likely, though, isn't it? It does look like, if I had to put money on it one way or another, if it's a binary choice, that it would take a full Iraq-style invasion to change that regime. And then, of course, then what? Who comes next? If the Americans will just control it like Iraq, put someone like Paul Bremer in charge, or, you know, some US diplomat person, or put a US general, David Petraeus. Not the, you know, they wouldn't do him now, he's old and retired, but, you know, the equivalent. The modern day, the 2026 equivalent, David Petraeus, put him in charge, or make the Iranians have their own political leadership, like what they've done in Venezuela. Let mostly the political leadership that was already there continue. Who knows? Who knows? It's a quagmire now, isn't it? The Iran question is now a quagmire for the United States and Donald Trump. Seems, at this point, anyway, on the morning of Monday the 20th, there's no clear, clean off-ramp for the Donald. He wants to talk to them in Islamabad, and they're like, no. We don't want to, and we feel like we don't need to. No. You can poke your peace talks in Islamabad. Your move, Donald. I mean, it's, from their point of view, it's sort of crazy, isn't it? I think. Well, they'll be left ruling over a country completely in rubble then, won't they? I suspect Trump has got the will to say to Hegseth, all right, do it then. Yeah, blow up their power stations and bridges. Go. The idea that Trump always chickens out. He doesn't always, does he? Far from always. I think he has got the balls, the stomach, the chutzpah to let Hegseth do that. We'll see over the next 2.5 days. It may be by Wednesday or Thursday I'm reporting to you. Yep, the US military is in the process of blowing up all the power stations and bridges. Okay. All right. Should we have a look at On This Day in History? You guys like that segment. I like doing that. Should we have a quick look? Down through the centuries, on this day, the 20th of April, what happened of note? All right. Oh, there's a good one straight away for any English fans. The Round Table Tournament held on this day in 1290, late 13th century, held near Winchester. Dan Tubbs lives in Winchester, doesn't he? Lovely, lovely place, Winchester. In imitation of King Arthur, to commemorate the betrothal of one of Edward I's daughters. Okay, so there's this thing that Edward I, Edward Longshanks, that is Longshanks, Edward Plantagenet, he had this giant table made. It's like massive, it like weighs 2 ton or something, and it's like 18 foot across or whatever. This table, that's what that picture is. In memory of King Arthur. Now, King Arthur was supposed to have lived in like the 5th century or 6th century. On epochs, Harry. On epochs, I've got long form content all about King Arthur in conversation with Elizabeth Haverin, actually, talking all about King Arthur. You want a bit of long-form content? You want me, an hour or two, or whatever it was, talking about the Arthurian legend? No, Geoffrey of Monmouth, Christian de Troyes, Mallory, everything to do with Arthur. Oh, it's there. It's behind the paywalls. It was £5 a month. Overseas.com. Do consider signing up. But so by the 13th century, the age of Edward I, Arthur is already a thing of myth, a thing of legend. It's already like something in the past that you would hark back to. By the 13th century. And that's what Edward did. Edward I seemed to have loved the Arthurian legend. thought of himself as a modern day Arthur. So he had this thing built, and it still exists. It's physically still there. It's in, you could go see it physically if you want to. It's on the wall. Massive, obviously. 18 foot across or whatever. I think it's in Winchester Castle or Winchester Cathedral. Anyway, it still physically exists, and you can go and see it. A remarkable thing. Fantastic thing. Lovely. Love it. Okay, on this day in 1862, first pasteurisation test is completed by Louis Pasteur and Claude Bernard. Yeah, very important. Louis Pasteur, you know, the history of medicine and things. Yep, important, important stuff. Lots of people's lives have been saved by the work of Louis Pasteur. On this day, 1902, Marie and Pierre Curie isolate the radioactive compound radium chloride. Also, interesting in the history of science, Pierre Curie died quite quickly, didn't he, of radiation poisoning. Now you can use it for x-rays and things. Or at the time, they thought radium was like some sort of wonder material and you could use it in everything. You could put it in paint and make the paint luminous. You can make loads of things out. You have radium tablets. It's good for you. Good for what ails you. In the early 20th century, they made loads and loads of products with radium in it. Some a lot more radioactive than others. Anyway, Pierre Curie died. Well, Marie Curie, in the end, died many years, quite a few years after him, of not exactly radiation poisoning, but of complications of ill health that was almost certainly to do with being exposed to radiation. Okay. Fascinating, interesting. On this day, 1968, British politician Enoch Powell makes his controversial Rivers of Blood speech. It's not actually that controversial unless you're a lefty. Perfectly reasonable what he said in that. Perfectly reasonable. On my channel with Mr. H Reviews called The State of Politics, State of Politics, we've got a long-form bit of content there all about the life and career of Enoch Powell. What is it, like 40, 45 minutes, an hour long? I can't remember. A fairly long conversation all about Enoch Powell, his life. All his early life and when he fought in North Africa against the Nazis in North Africa. And then his political career after that. What he was saying in that Rivers of Blood speech is perfectly reasonable. And in fact, we now live in a world literally far worse than what he described. Rivers of Blood. What, like the Manchester Arena bombing? Like 7-7? Those rivers of blood you're talking about. Like at Southport. He undersold how bad it would, could get, if anything. Enoch Powell was a great man. He was a man of vision and genius. He was a genius. Quite literally, he was one of the youngest professors ever. He was a great man, Enoch Powell. Don't buy the lie, the revisionism from whoever, some lefty traitor commie, a politics Joe or something, Diane Abbott or something, that he was evil and wrong-headed and racist and stuff. No, he was a man of great vision. Cassandra, doomed not to be listened to properly in his own lifetime. Okay. On this day in 1980... climax of the Berber Spring in Algeria sees hundreds of Berber political activists arrested. Yeah, so that's much more interesting to do with if you're a French person. The long saga of France and Algeria. Can't get into it here, but it's a long story, a long saga. Okay, on this day in 1999, Columbine High School Massacre, Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold kill 13 people and injure 24 others before committing suicide at Columbine High School, Colorado. Again, it's one of those things I've read a lot about since, for some reason, got a bit fascinated with it years ago. There's that film, is it Gus Van Sant film, Elephant? In that he seems to argue or tries to make the argument that they were in some sort of gay love pact on top of everything else, Eric and Dylan. I don't think that's the case. No one really knows, but I don't think that's the case. But anyway, then there's Bowling for Columbine, isn't there? That fat dude, I can't remember his name even. But the real events of that, and as much as we can glean about Eric and Dylan in real life, I find that interesting. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's, you know, 13 people isn't a giant, giant kill count. But it was a seminal one. The Columbine High School Massacre. Just one of many, many high school massacres, right? Or massacres in general, mass shooting events. One of thousands, really. But that one was seminal. It felt seminal. It was in all sorts of... Michael Moore. Some of the chat saying Michael Moore. That fat dude. Michael Moore. Yeah. Disgusting leftist. Crazy man, really. But yeah. Before and after Columbine. It's like... Before and after 9/11. It seemed like... A nicer world, a less violent world, it seemed like, before Columbine, before 9/11, and after it, you're in a darker phase. It felt like, I mean, it was a horrible one, really horrible one. All right, on this day in 2010, the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig explodes, killing 11 and causing the rig to sink, causing a massive oil discharge into the Gulf of Mexico and an environmental disaster. Again, Harry, 2010, you would have just been a little tiny little kid. Seems like yesterday to me. Yeah. It seems like yesterday to me, sorry.
Yeah. No, I would have been five.
Right, okay, yeah. Oh, God, I feel old yet. Yeah, it was really bad, wasn't it? And it was BP, wasn't it? Like that oil rig was BP, British Petroleum, right? Deepwater Horizon. They couldn't cap it for ages. And it just spilled loads and loads of oil, crude oil, into the Gulf of Mexico. It was a bad one. Although it does seem that the world, the Earth itself, recovers quickly from these sorts of things. Because it could have been a natural thing, right? It could have been an earthquake. Let's just imagine, just for a moment, it was just an earthquake that ruptured the crust slightly and loads of crude or loads of whatever seeps up from under the seabed. Like, that has happened millions of times throughout geological time. And the Earth and the oceans are sort of used to it. They clean themselves in a sense, that's very low resolution, but in a way, for some people say, environmentalists say, oh, the oil spill, for example, in the Deepwater Horizon, that will be there for hundreds and hundreds of years. All the wildlife will suffer and be killed for hundreds and hundreds of years going forward now. No. The Earth finds a way. It sort of clears itself up relatively quickly. Not that it's a good thing. Not that I'm trying to run defence on behalf of BP and the people that made mistakes at the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig. Anyway, I remember that like it's not long ago at all. It's like over 15 years ago. God, I feel old yet. All right, on this day in 2024, US passes a bipartisan bill of $95 billion foreign aid package for Ukraine, Israel and Taiwan, and a bill against TikTok. £95 billion for Ukraine to embezzle and Iran and Israel to spend on arms and armaments and Taiwan. Because America is absolutely committed to protecting Taiwan and Israel. And now throw Ukraine on there as well.
Good.
Doesn't really seem in the interests of the average American person. But okay. All right. Let's have a look at our rubber rents and super chats, shall we? Let's do that. Let's do this with my mic so I can see. All right. Global church history in at number one. And still... reigning, defending. Number one. Still at number one. For the fifth week in a row. All right. Global church history says, on this day in 1233, Pope Gregory IX founded the Inquisition Bill via the bull Licet ad Copedios. Copedion Capiendos. Nobody expects the Inquisition, do they? And Jacques Cartier began... explorational expedition. Jacques Cartier, so he's Canada, isn't it? That's all like the Gulf of St. Lawrence, isn't it? The St. Lawrence River. It's all Canada. The French exploring Canada and Newfoundland all around there. all in there. Because once they found the New World, once Chris Columbus had shown that there definitely is giant land masses on the other side of the Atlantic, it's game on. Right? It's a race. Largely, what, Dutch, English, French, Spanish and Portuguese. They all want to take as much of it as they possibly can. The French went more northerly, the more northerly route. Well, there's the Treaty of Los Torridos or something, I can't remember the name, where the Pope had said the Spanish and the Portuguese could carve the New World up between them. Just them, just the Spanish and the Portuguese. People like the Dutch and the French and the English are like, huh. Especially the Dutch and the English who are Protestant. We don't have to do, we're not interested in what the Pope says. We'll do what we want. We'll sail where we want, thanks. Anyway, the French went more north, more Canada. To this day, you've still got French-speaking Canadians, haven't you? Oh, on epochs. Sorry. You think I haven't got, like, 10, 12, 15 hours of content talking about that sort of thing? Largely focusing on Magellan. The exploration of the New World and stuff. Who do you think you're dealing with? Come on. Of course that's there. Behind the paywall for as little as £5 a month. Okay, for Tea and Barber. Morning, mate. How are you doing? Morning, sir. For Tea and Barber says... Oh, you say, morning, mate. Good weekend? ? Yeah, it was good, thanks. Yeah, it's fine. Had a little bit of free time on Sunday. Really should have worked on my novel and instead spent a lot of it playing Civ 4. I need some downtime. I do actually work reasonably hard, quite long hours, nearly a week. Need to do more writing on my novel, though, badly. But it's a good weekend. No, it's fine. It's all good. You say, the Cardiff Devils won the title in ice hockey. I don't know about ice hockey. I really don't follow ice hockey whatsoever. Particularly British ice hockey. The Cardiff Devils. Okay. Never heard of them. I know there's... The Romford Raiders. I used to live near Romford for years and years. They've got an ice hockey team, isn't it? The Romford Raiders. Okay, Cardiff are the best ice hockey team at the moment in the UK. Who knew? But you say, I'm very pleased. You put horrendous dead at Nürburgring. Oh, I don't know about that either. That's news to me. I'll have to Google that as soon as I get off. Horrendous dead at Nürburgring. The racetrack. There was a big crash, was there? A terrorist event? I've literally got no idea. In fact, Harry, would you mind just quickly Googling that and I'll come back to you in a moment?
Yeah.
What happened at the Nürburgring? Okay. And then you put, Kier on the way out, but the next PM might be worse. Imagine that, yeah. Might have to put up with the interim David Lammy. Lammy is my Kang. We'll be over the moon with that one. Who would be Prime Minister next? Might be Angela Rayner. Or Yvette Cooper? Wes Streeting? Prime Minister Streeting, imagine that. The first openly gay Prime Minister. Although Ted Heath. Okay, let's move on. The next Rumble rant is from JC Warlock. JC Warlock says, you ever see that the Loch Ness Monster is actually the Castle Fort George? I don't know about that. I don't believe in the Loch Ness Monster, anyway. The famous picture from, like, the 20s or the 30s was proven to be a fake, wasn't it? And it might be, but it's just unlikely, isn't it, that, like, one specimen or one family of, like, prehistoric dinosaur-era creatures would survive in that loch. That's not how it works, right? You need at least a few different families. You'd need a small number, a few, if like a dozen or more, for it to... I just don't think the Loch Ness Monster is real, but I don't know what you're talking about there. Castle Fort George. The Loch Ness Monster is actually the Castle Fort George. I don't know about that. It's interesting, though. Maybe I'll Google that later to see exactly what you mean. You said, it's the shape of a dragon's head. The dragon is the one St. George killed for the church. The dragon being Scottish flag. Okay, interesting. I'm not sure exactly about all of that. But there you go. I'm not a Loch Ness Monster believer, Bring me, like a lot of things, bring me evidence, bring me slam dunk evidence where zoologists and scientists can, you've actually got a specimen there, 100% real, right there. Sure. Okay, then I'm on board. Until such times. Okay, and then Rick TWGP, not that you're arguing for it, you're saying it's something else, right? It's the, okay. Rick TWGP says, in case you're not going to say Adolf Hitler was born today in 1889, okay. There you go. Adolf Hitler was born on this day in 1889. I was actually listening to an audiobook over the weekend a bit whilst playing Civ 4. That was a deep dive into Hitler's life. And a load of it, like the first hour or two of this audiobook, was just talking about Hitler's dad, mum and dad. And their lives. It was very interesting. And the household in which Hitler was born into and grew up into, his half-brothers and sisters, and his father's previous wives, and the dynamic. He had a half-older brother who ran away from home, and the ire of the strict dad turned on young Hitler himself. Also, so interesting, fascinating. You know, the adult you turn into is, in most ways, is a reflection of your childhood, isn't it? So I think if you really want to understand someone from history, whoever it is, if you really want to understand them, eventually you have to look at their childhood a bit. That's why on History Bro, I did a long, long form bit of content, many, many, many videos, all long form, about the childhood of Stalin. Very, very brutal upbringing Stalin had. Very, very brutal. His father, a complete psycho. Crazy baso. Anyway, if you really want to know, get inside some, try to get inside some, even attempt a bit of armchair psychology, you've got to know some of the details about their childhood, right? So, okay, another one just quickly popped in. Another two quickly just popped in from Rumble Rants. Let's read them. JC Warlock says, that Deepwater Horizon disaster was predicted by the movie The Knowing. Not seen that movie. Which was a movie about predicting disasters with Nicolas Cage. The Loch Ness Monster was an icon of Scottish heritages. I've not seen that movie with Nicolas Cage, I'm afraid, but it sounds interesting. Maybe I'll check it out one day. Probably won't. Might do, though. The Knowing. Might be a good movie. Might be a good movie. And then one other one, again, from JC Warlock says, was pointed out by a YouTuber called Dutch Since, who predicts earthquakes. Lol. Okay. There you go. Dutch Since. All right. Should we do the YouTube Super Chats? Harry, you have to make that come up on my screen for me. Make it so engage. There it is. Thank you. Thank you, sir. All right. For you today, we've got something Wickedly, which is Shona, fan of the show and State of Politics. State of Politics. You put, Starmer the Mushroom kept in the dark. Aye, right. All right. He's like a fungus of a man. A boring, slow fungus. It was kept in the dark about Mandy. Like a mushroom. Thanks for the super chat. Okay. Opening Doors 1 says, is a ham sandwich a snack or a meal? Well, it's not a meal to me. I'll put that much more in the realm of a snack. Imagine if you hadn't eaten all day. Imagine you had some breakfast, but you hadn't eaten all day until the evening, your dinner time, 7, 6, 7, 8 p.m. You're starving. And you get served a ham sandwich. You're like, that's not a meal. Come on. I would call it a snack myself. All right. Thomas Tyne says, been listening from Oregon. Yes, Oregon. Go Ducks. Go Ducks. Oregon. Lovely. A lot of my family from, it's where my dad was born and raised. On Monday mornings, for a few weeks now, libertarian leading, nice. Unhappy with both major parties, sure, good. We can commiserate, probably. Yeah, a lot of Western countries facing the same sorts of things. Nearly all the parties are a part of the uni party thing, right? That's why hopefully Rupert Lowe and Restore will be something genuinely different. Aim high, vote low, minions must go from Zimmer to Boomers. Hopefully Rupert Lowe, you know, the proof of the pudding is actually when you're in government, how you behave in government. But I've got faith, I believe, that Rupert Lowe isn't captured by the WEF and the Uni Party and various other cabals and influences. I genuinely believe that. I know for a fact that a lot of people around him aren't. I know for a fact. So hopefully Rupert Lowe will be different. Hopefully in America you can get, after Trump, you might get someone who will really drain the swamp. Yeah, we're in the same boat in many ways. Okay, Principled Uncertainty says, is there something akin to a super injunction concerning the Starmer arsonist trial next week? At any other time, this would be the story of the century for the tabloids. Very suspicious. It is very suspicious, isn't it? The Ukrainian arsonists who set fire to Keir Starmer's car and the front door of a flat he used to live in, and I think a couple of other things. How the mainstream corporate legacy mainstream media just lie about it by omission every single day, more or less. Just not talk about it. Nope. Don't talk about what's going on in Ireland or Epson or those Ukrainian arsonists or Ehud Barak. Just don't mention it, guys. Remember? Yep, got it. It's very suspicious, isn't it? When their trial comes up soon, is it next month or in a few weeks, as you said? I'll be fascinated to see what comes out in open court about that. Because they've pleaded innocent, which means there will be a defence and a prosecution and cross-examination and stuff, and hopefully loads of details will come out. Unless at the last moment they change their plea to guilty and the court just goes, okay, you're guilty, got it, yeah, and your sentence is, and boom, end of story. And you don't get all the details. But if that happens, that in and of itself is highly suspicious, isn't it? But at the moment, I believe they've pleaded innocent, which means we'll get all sorts of details. I'm fascinated to see how that plays out. But Principled Uncertainty just says, is there a super injunction? I don't know. I don't think so. Like a D order, D notice or whatever, where the papers aren't allowed to report on it. I don't know. But you have said there it's very suspicious, and I couldn't agree more. It's highly suspicious. Everything about that stinks to high heaven, doesn't it? Who are they? Who are they exactly? What motivated them to do those arson attacks? Exactly. All right. Mr. Dicky Bingo, how are you this morning, good sir? Not Dinky Bingo, Mr. Dicky Bingo, says, Starmer makes no decisions and is directed. Yeah, I would have thought so, yeah. There's people above him, aren't there? Whoever they are, telling him what to do and what not to do. Yeah. It feels that way, doesn't it? Something Wickedly Again, Shona says, gerrymandering, jiggery pokery. Yeah. Not sure 100% what that's in reference to, but it could be a number of things we've talked about this morning. Jiggery pokery is a good word. Gerrymandering is a good word. Gerrymandering, jiggery pokery, skullduggery. Okay, and Shona again says, glow-in-the-dark tattoos have formaldehyde in. Oh, God. Probably don't get those, if you can. I know you've got loads of tats, haven't you, Shona? But I haven't got any tattoos. I haven't got a single one. I shan't now. When I was a kid in the 80s and 90s, it wasn't the case that everyone would get tattoos. Harry, have you got tattoos?
I do, yeah.
How many? Just roughly. Have you got loads or just one or two?
Four.
There you go. It's fashionable nowadays, isn't it? Zoomers, get all loads of tats. Get a whole sleeve done. Get your back or chest covered. When I was a kid, normal people didn't do that. If you was like in a biker gang, perhaps. If you was in the Royal Navy. You was like a... Yeah, the average person just would not get loads of tattoos when I was growing up. So, but you got formaldehyde in it to make it glow in the dark. It's not my cup of tea. I don't fancy that. Okay, and then the last one for today, unless more come in the next 20 seconds or so. Marcos 588 says, GT race Max entered, big quali shunt, RIP Juha. Okay, oh, so that would be in reference to the Nürburgring. So I know Max does all sorts of other racing, doesn't he now? You know, virtual and real life. So there's a GT race with Max, that'd be Max Verstappen. And there was a big crash in quali and someone died. I'll have to look that up. That passed me by. So Harry, did you Google it?
Yeah, so it was 7 cars were involved in it.
Right. It was a crash in quali.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone died. At least one person died.
Yeah, it was 7 cars crashed and one person died. It's pretty horrendous.
Oh, God. Okay. Oh, well, there you go. The Nürburgring is a dangerous circuit. Quite a lot of blind corners, blind crests. Some people sort of refuse to race at the Nürburgring because it's so dangerous. Especially if you're in like a... You're not just going around on your own on a track day in like your own BMW, but you're in something extremely fast, extremely light and fast with downforce package. And you go off the road at like 200 miles an hour or something. Well, yeah, RIP that person who ever died. All right, on that note, that's the show. It's now 15 minutes past 9 in the AM British summer time. Monday the 20th of April in the year of our Lord, 2026. It's a glorious day. It's a glorious morning. It feels like spring in Britain, in the southeast, in Wiltshire. Do try and make the best of the day ahead. I know it's not always possible. It really isn't when you've got a job and all sorts of responsibilities all over the show. Can't always make the best of the day, can you? But if you can, if it's possible, carpe diem, seize the day. Try to do something important. It's of value with your time. It's the most valuable thing you've got, your time. You'll never get it back. Far more valuable than any gold or jewels or cars or houses you will ever own. Your time. Try and make it count. All right then, until tomorrow morning.